Danny Bible is a prisoner in Texas. If the state has its way, he'll be dead within the hour. This is Execution Watch. Huntsville, Texas. Death penalty capital of the Western world, where prison staff is preparing to put Bible to death by injecting him with a deliberate drug overdose. During the next hour, KPFT's Execution Watch will broadcast live coverage of the killing in Texas, the state responsible for more than a third of all U.S. executions. Execution Watch host Ray Hill, with criminal defense attorneys Larry Douglas, Mike Gillespie, and Paige Yannick. Huntsville reporter outside the death house, Joseph Clark. The Execution Watch for Danny Bible begins. Don't you know they're killing people? Don't you know they're killing people?
Our opening music is done by Victoria Panetti, whose brother is somewhere on death row with a mental health condition. And I'm going to open up tonight's show by regretting the retirement of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. We do not execute kids under 18 anymore because of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. A lot of people with severe mental retardation are not executed anymore because of Supreme Court Justice Anthony Kennedy. Some cases get a break in understanding because of circumstantial evidence because of Justice Anthony Kennedy. I do not know what sort of monsters are slinking to the White House to get appointed to the Supreme Court of the United States. But those of us in the anti-execution business will miss Anthony Kennedy, and that will begin way too soon. It is June 27th, 2018. And on the Gurney, well, let's see what's going on in Huntsville. Let's get Joseph Clark on. Joseph?
How are you doing, Uncle Ray?
What's going on in Huntsville?
Well, unfortunately, the witnesses just crossed the road right at 6 o'clock as the bells were going off. We got a bunch of protesters out here, a lot of new protesters showing up from Sam Houston. We got the regulars out here. We got Gloria with the megaphone from Texas Abolishment to Death Penalty.
I can hear her in the background.
We got the prison show out here going live. We got a bunch of signs. We got a bunch of people honking their horns against the death penalty. So,
well, now Linda was in the group going in to witness, right?
Yes, sir. She's witnessing right now. She just crossed the road about 3 minutes ago.
Okay, now, so our witnesses will understand, while I've still got you on the line, when the witnesses cross the road, it means that Danny Bible is strapped to the gurney and needles are in his veins.
Yes, sir.
It has taken extra staff to do that, number one, because he was wheeled into the death chamber in a wheelchair, and it took multiple officers to lift him up onto the gurney. And then it took extra help to hold down his arms because he has a severe Parkinson's disease. So they've staffed up for the killing of Danny.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine if they hadn't used extra staff for all that procedure.
Well, thank you for your report. You will call us back when the witnesses come out, please.
Yes, sir, I will.
All right. Danny's on the gurney, and the witnesses are in the room, and Grazik is already working on his Chronicle article that he will do. And Mike, what happened in this case?
Well, it seemed like in this case we might have had a true serial killer. Nobody knows what he might have done or what might not have done. Nobody knows if some of the things he was talking about aren't true. So let's just talk about the things we know about.
Yeah, what does the record say?
What this case is a 1979 murder and rape of a lady named Inez Denton. She was raped and killed with an ice pick. That becomes a rape murder, which is eligible for the death penalty. That is what we're here for today.
And it's a Harris County case?
It's a Harris County case. That's what we're here for today. The interesting part is that from what I can see, he wasn't on the radar in 79. He first came on the radar in 84 when he was arrested in Fort Myers, Florida on something. And at that time, he was found out that he had killed a lady named Hutchins in Weatherpool, Texas. This is a lady who he murdered. And based on that confession, he got 25 years in prison. And also, because he has some incidents going on in Wyoming and Montana, he got two cases of kidnapping. Now, some of the things which is interesting to me is it seems like in the cases in Montana and Wyoming, not only was it kidnapping, was it kidnapping and rape of an 11-year-old child. For that case, he got 20 years.
20 years. 20 which
years.
Could run concurrently
which
with
ran concurrently with the 25 Texas case.
Under the theory that time does not stop?
That's true. On this case, he did physically 9 years, and he paroled out.
9 years on the 25.
25 years. Or more important, 9 years
on the
murders and murders and rapes and
yeah.
Get out in nine. When he got out, he then did all other kinds of things that I don't want to talk about now, including sexual assault on family members, but that's not really part of this case except for the future dangerousness.
Was information about those cases allowed into this record?
They were allowed in this record to prove that of future dangerousness.
Okay.
But as far as this case is concerned,
sentencing, it wasn't. Okay, let me explain to the audience here. Did you get ahead of me here? These lawyers sometimes get ahead of me. What we're talking about here is the bifurcated practice of Texas capital law. First, there's a trial about guilt or innocence. Once that is settled, then there is a trial about the punishment itself. And during the trial of the punishment, previous offenses can be introduced pretty much easily. Now, whether he was convicted of them, that helps introduce that. But even if he wants, it can be alleged, which seemed to me like a prejudicial thing without sufficient proof. But the rules are the rules. Wait a minute. Yeah, sure.
And Ray, also the bifurcated trial and the punishment evidence, that's present for all criminal cases, not just for capital murders,
yeah. But
all criminal cases, the bifurcated first guilt-innocence phase, and then the punishment. And then at the punishment, extraneous offenses, including prior bad acts, can be introduced in evidence.
Okay. And my burglary cases could have been done that way.
Absolutely. Okay,
but those I won, they didn't do any.
Well, the guilt-innocence is either found
once you're innocent, you're out of there.
If there's a not guilty verdict, then there's no punishment
and
phase.
And then after I pled guilty to one case, then I had to deal with all those other cases, which I was very generous with the information and wound up with 160 years.
When there's a finding of guilt, whether through a trial or through a plea, then punishment becomes an issue.
Yeah. I think it broke Karen, what's his name?
Vance's
heart more than it did mine.
It probably did.
Yeah. Carol Gentlefell. Okay, go ahead, Mike.
He got 25 for the murder of Miss Hutchins. Now, that's not the Harris County case we have. That's another case he had.
That's Weatherpood case.
Weatherpood case.
Did Palo Pinto, I believe.
25 on that, 20 on the Montana-Wyoming case, and he got out of 9. So now he's out by 93.
He's out by 93, and then by this case coming around, how long has he been out?
Well, what happened is he got arrested in 98 in Louisiana for another kidnapping.
Okay.
And what he did was a rape case, and he tried to stuff her body into a duffel bag and couldn't do it. They suspected it would have been a murder case if he got in a duffel bag, but she got away. So that's the case in Louisiana that he got sentenced for. Now, the interesting thing is we all know Louisiana is a tough place to do time.
Yeah.
It's a tough place to do time. He was sentenced to Louisiana, and all of a sudden, Louisiana, he starts confessing to this case.
Wait a minute. In Louisiana, did he get a life sentence?
I understand it was a life sentence.
Okay. If you get a life sentence in Louisiana, it's very easy for that to be a life without parole.
That's correct.
As a matter of fact, normal life sentences in Texas are not like they are in Louisiana. In Texas, you can get life 20, mm-hmm. which means you're eligible for parole in 20 years. You can get life 40. You can double that if you want to. I mean, if that's to your liking. But in Louisiana, it's life, a lot of it, or life without parole. And hold on just a second. I need to tell the audience that Saeed has been preempted tonight, and Arab Voices is a regular program on KPFT dealing with issues more important than most of the things. It's just that the issue of life and death on Texas death row takes precedence even over other important programs. He will be back next week. You can visit him via his website, Arab Voices. And when you do that, on behalf of the Execution Watch, apologize for us for occupying his time and tell him we love the work that he is doing and encouraging him to keep it up. Now, back to the case. In Louisiana, you can get life without parole. Now, I know Angola Prison. I have been on Angola Prison. It was when they built it, it was so isolated that they had to put in their own radio station for them to have radio. And I've been on that radio station. I've been to the, I'm an honorary member of the Angola Lifers Association. I have a T-shirt and a certificate to back that up. And I taught civics to Angola lifers, which are people without parole. And the only way they will ever get out is to have their sentence reformed.
And I have talked to people myself, not like you've been there, but I've talked to people who've been Louisiana prison, and my experience is that petrifies people a whole lot. Life without parole in Louisiana is very scary. So scary that when he started confessing about these Texas murders, a lot of the Texas police officers were suspicious that he was just making this up to get out of Louisiana and go back to Texas again.
Well, that's entirely possible. It didn't work out that way for him.
It did not. But he did make some confessions, and with the confession, they found this body, which is the basis of this case. They also found other bodies. Two of the bodies that kind of bothered me was the case that he got 25 to life on him is Hutchinson's. He also confessed that when he killed her, he killed his sister-in-law, who was her roommate, and his sister-in-law's four-month-old son.
Mm.
And they had found those bodies buried a month after the murder. They had no link that he did it. Just like with the first case we heard today, Denton, they had no link that he did it. Only when he...
Other than his confession.
But that was in 98.
This guy likes to talk when he gets handcuffs
well,
on.
Well, nobody knew about it until he decided he didn't... And I'm not saying this is true, but the suspicion, he didn't want to be in Louisiana, so he said it to get to Texas.
Well, I know and love a lot of people who are professional convicts. Do time a lot. I know them. And they're very entertaining people. They're also very manipulative. If they can control anything, even in the process of controlling it, it works out to their disadvantage. They will do that. Kind of like presidents of the United States these days.
So after they found the bodies, they brought him back to Texas. He was tried on the first case, the Denton case, this case now, because that's all they needed. But all these other facts came up in the future dangerous part of the punishment hearing to show why he should get the death penalty and not, you know, get another life sentence.
Now, wait a minute. At that time, he's reasonably hale and hearty.
Yes, sir.
He's really had at that time. So the chances of his future dangerousness What if he got a life sentence? That dangerous to whom?
Well, that becomes what the show's all about. Why he's unique for is because, which I'm sure we're going to talk about next, is what happened to him while he was in prison.
Yeah.
And it's real, it's a real good way to prove you're no longer dangerous by proving you're in a wheelchair and you can't move. Okay?
Okay, so, well, let's get into that. What happened to that? Yannick, you
yes,
got
sir.
That story?
Yes, sir. Okay. He was convicted in 2003 of capital murder here in Harris County.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go into the facts of the trial if you'd like a little longer.
Well, all I need to know was he adequately represented?
Oh, he was well represented.
I mean, this is an Alan Isbell case.
This is an Alan Isbell and Skip Cornelius case. Those were the two defense lawyers who represented him. The two prosecutors that represented the state of Texas were Craig Goodhart
and
Kelly Siegler.
They brought in heavy guns for the other side. He was appointed heavy guns. They brought in another heavy gun. That would have been a trial to watch.
He had an exquisite defense representation.
Okay.
You could not have wished for a better combination of defense lawyers.
Of course, he's an indigent. This is appointed.
Yes. Well, of course, it was appointed.
Yeah.
In any event, it happened in 2003, and they did a masterful job of keeping out deleterious facts about this case and other cases that he had been accused of in the trial in chief. Because of the prosecutors involved and because they knew of all the deleterious facts that were not shared with the jury, the trial and punishment had a vividness that I would not have expected.
In the appeals, was the judge ever accused of being overgenerous to the prosecutor?
No, sir. There was no issue on the appeal as to the judge bending over backwards for the state or
anything.
There
may be evidence to the contrary.
There was no issue about that in appeal, and no one ever alluded to that. So, I mean, I wasn't physically present for the arguments in front of the Court of Criminal Appeals. But, you know, I vaguely remember this going around us at the time, because it was in the 351st District Court, and I've been practicing here in Harris County for a long, 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 long time. And I know all of these people involved. We all know all these people
involved. In the milieu, this was a big case.
Well, all capitals are noteworthy.
Yeah.
This one, because of the complicated fact patterns and the issues of his transience and the fact that they were trying a case that happened in 1979 and was not put in front of a jury until 2003 as a result of his confessions, which were so delayed. I mean,
20 years later.
It was a very noteworthy case.
Yeah, 20 years later, and then you've got to go recreate the facts of 20 years ago in order to make case. Tell us something about the trial. Larry, is there anything about this trial that pops into your mind?
Well, the thing that sets it apart in my mind, Ray, are the statements that he made. Danny Bible had been around for a long time.
Yeah.
He'd been in our system for a while.
Sure.
He knew or should have known how to keep his mouth shut. And we have a system in this country where we do not allow involuntary confessions to be used against a person. And Danny Bible's confessions, statements, were very detailed, and he did not have to give them.
He did not have to give them. There is a record of his being given a warning about his rights.
The statements never could have been admitted without him having been given those warnings. Now, he was the issue was raised that there were two states involved. That is, the statements were given in Louisiana.
In Louisiana.
Whereas
about
the,
Texas cases.
The statements were used in court in Texas. So that raises the Miranda issue, which is a fully federal kind of issue. The Miranda decision is U.S. federal law, but Texas codified, as so many states have, in 3822, Texas codified the warnings that have to be given,
sure.
or something essentially the same. And so while the warnings in Louisiana were not exactly what we use in Texas, the court found that they were substantially similar.
There's a good bit in the record about contrast and compare
right.
of the required warnings. Who makes that? Is the judge? But, of course, it's an arguable issue.
The judge has to make the call. But for instance, the contest were things like whatever you say can be used against you
sure.
in trial,
mm-hmm.
whereas maybe used against you in court.
Okay.
So we're
talking about nibbling around the edges.
Oh yes,
it was, and but the fact is, not just in capital cases, but in all criminal cases. I mean, people know that once you're given the warnings, you have the right to remain silent. You make the DA's job so much easier when you present to
whatever
them on a civil platter. Details of what you have done, which
any people, detail about what you've done.
This 1979 case of the murder in 1979, nobody knew.
Yes.
He had not been connected to that at all.
It was a secret.
Well, the deal that occurs to me is that he got over to Louisiana and he picked up a life sentence and he's talking to the other convicts in the cell block and they're telling him about Angola life. Now, he's done time before. He knows how to do time, but Angola, just being Angola, is this great big old 6,000-acre plantation. They only have a fence up on one side because the Mississippi River is the blockade on the other three sides, and it is full of alligators, boa constrictors, and water moccasins. Now, what is going to? Who wants to run? Well, the guy, they said a guy made him a Piro and got out of there, but I did not personally meet him. And he had lived in them swamps all of his life. But the deal is that do you think that there's enough fear in the imagery of life without parole in Angola that maybe Texas death has some strange appeal?
Well, I don't know that. We can conclude that someone volunteered to die, that Danny Bible volunteered to die. But one of the issues that we face as defense lawyers is sometimes your client, accused people sometimes get, in this case they use the term entrepreneurial. That is, Danny Bible was represented by counsel in
mm-hmm.
Louisiana on the cases that were in Louisiana,
yeah.
but not by he hadn't been appointed a lawyer on the Texas cases
mm-hmm.
when he decided to talk to law enforcement from Texas.
Yeah,
okay, and law enforcement they wanted to make sure that they got adequate confessions from him. Now the officers who examined him did talk to him a lot about how old he was.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no matter what happens here, you know, you're going to end up spending the rest of your life.
Sure.
Locked up.
Sure.
And that was an issue raised on appeal as to whether the examiner was trying to persuade him to confess by giving him some assurance that he would receive a life sentence in Texas. But the record was replete with evidence that the officers made it clear. I can't make a deal with you, which Danny already knew.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can make a deal with
sure,
you other than the DA.
DA in Houston.
But
yeah.
but the record shows that Danny Bible became somewhat, as they say, entrepreneurial. by trying to barter that I've got information for you. And he disclosed this information, perhaps thinking, not being given any assurances.
The whereabouts of the bodies, for instance?
The cases were there, especially the 79 case that he was convicted of, in this case, of the death penalty.
Yeah, that body wasn't hidden. It was exposed out to the public.
The body was displayed. The body was displayed, but there was nothing that connected Danny Bible to the killing. Mm-hmm. So he confessed to the rape and murder, which got him a death sentence. Okay, that's what happened here. But it started with him. He initiated the information exchange that is that's going to apparently result in his being executed this evening. That was all on him. That was something that he initiated. That was something that he, for whatever reason, now perhaps he may have been confused. I have no idea what he was, but there was some argument to be made that perhaps the interrogators had given him something to cause him some hope of receiving a death penalty. I'm not a life sentence in Texas, but no such assurance was. It was clear from the record that no such assurance had ever been given, and in fact that the officers made it clear that the officers totally lacked the authority to cut a deal giving him.
Sure.
But he confessed,
and that's in the record.
Yes.
But the statements that he gave were so long that there were a total of four statements.
Well, I'm reminded of my old friend that confessed to murders all over the country, and it turned out that he didn't do any of them.
I remember them.
Yeah, you remember? You remember? I as a matter of fact, I got involved in that case and called.
They took him out to various scenes, and he was making up things.
He would stand and point.
Oh yeah.
Like he knew what he was talking about, and so when I got, some convict wrote me and told me what was going on, and I talked to Jim Maddox, who was the attorney general at the time, and I said, "You're fixing to execute a man for a crime that happened in Texas 20 minutes after a crime he has confessed to and been convicted of in Broward County, Florida, 20 minutes. And so they went to Henry Lee Lucas, and they said, "What is this, 20 minutes, Broward County?" And he said, "You ever seen Star Trek?" Scotty Defense.
There was nothing like this in the Danny Bible case.
No, there was nothing like this.
But he did talk a lot.
He talked. There were lengthy statements. But the interrogators, and these guys are getting so good now, it's frightening. They made sure that he was properly accommodated with everything that he needed. Enough rest, okay, the warnings, and then going through step by step by step, and not keeping him there too long.
Yeah, the period of time that he was questioned and gave statements was circumscribed. It was not like he was talking for hours and hours at a time. It was at the most 3 hours.
Yeah, and that's a good rate. That's a good rate.
About three hours.
But this 12 hours and so forth, that can be pretty coercive.
Henry would talk as long as you had lived. Henry had been nobody all of his life, and on in these cases he got more attention than he had ever received in his life. I think me and Jim Maddox, who is now also dead, Henry Lee died of cancer in general population on the Ellis unit. But me and Jim Maddox decided that there was enough evidence to believe that he killed his mother. But then he might have gotten a pass on that because she was certainly a person deserving of killing. And considering the childhood that he had. But this is, Mike, you're being awfully quiet. Are you finding anything in all the sidebar research?
Well, it's just a somber case, and the things we're not talking about.
Mike, I don't think we've ever come in here and not done a somber case.
I hear you, but what I get somber about is how much crime against children he did.
Yeah.
And these are not direct crimes, but this is the things that were brought up. You're talking about the Wyoming case is taking an axe to a car with a 3-year-old inside of it, then coming down and killing the 4-month-old baby, and then mutual various sex offenders against nieces.
Were any of these cases actually tried?
No.
No.
So and there's no need to try them.
Yeah, right. Because we don't get there. But the thing about it is, for the purpose of this show, if there's not a trial record, then it's what a prosecutor said.
But if you're talking about punishment, Ray, then prior bad acts, they don't have to be adjudicated. I had a prosecutor threaten me one time that he found out that my client had stolen a bicycle when he was 12 years old.
Yeah, right.
So I'll use that too. And anything because any prior bad act, they can use that, you know. So the acts themselves don't have to be crimes.
Well, there's a good thing there wasn't a mattress in this case for Kelly to stab 47 times.
There is that.
Danny's not the kind of guy you want to rent the spare room to as a boarder. That's not who he is.
They did have some of the victims of these offenses come to court to testify as to what happened to them. And just like lawyers, one of the appellate points was, well, you can't use some of the victims who didn't testify. It's just, you know, his statement, you got no proof. Well, some of the girls who did testified that they saw him. So the evidence was overwhelming what he did.
Well,
this is not the same burden.
I would like to point out to the audience that it is 6:31. Danny has been strapped with needles in his veins since before 6 o'clock. And we don't know about the chemicals. There's a problem with the chemicals. You know, the governor is in another lawsuit, not giving the expiration date of Texas execution chemicals.
And speaking of lawsuit, just a silly point, but didn't he have a massive lawsuit against the state of Texas for the car accident that he was crippled in?
Tell me about the car accident. Somebody bring that up.
Well, I'll start with that, and then somebody conclude it. He's being on his way to be transported to Huntsville, to the Walsh unit where we have death row, and this transport occurred.
Wait a minute. Then that, if you're going to the Walsh unit, be executed, you are leaving another unit to be executed. If you're going to Ellis unit, then you can be coming from a Harris County jail.
Well, he's coming from Harris County to Ellis.
Okay.
And there is another prisoner in the van with him, and he's in a van and a prison driver. And on his way from Harris County up to Huntsville in 2005, there is a massive car accident, and the driver of the van is killed. The other prisoner is killed, and he is
the driver of the other car is killed.
Okay, and
there's three deaths.
Three deaths, and he is seriously injured, but he is not killed.
He is smeared all over all four walls, but he's alive and patchable. Yes. Okay, and so that'll delay a date for you.
And I had heard that the prison guard caused the accident.
I don't know. I don't know any facts about the accident other than what I just conveyed.
Well, what I said is that's a hell of a lawsuit against the prison system for causing his injuries. As a warning, it was ever pursued.
Well, the thing about it is when you're in death row, you can't exactly depose the other side for your trial. So. No. I know how inmate transportation happens. It's unusual for two people to be transported from death row in the same van. It happens, but it's unusual. And it usually happens when it's another death row inmate. We got two death row inmates, maybe in Harris County, to get a date.
Right.
For an execution.
Well, I don't know anything about the identity of the other inmate that was in the vehicle. I really don't. No. I didn't read anything about
it. No, it was all in the newspapers. I remember when it happened. And that was 2005?
Yes, sir, I believe
2005. So Danny spent a good bit of time recuperating from that accident, during which time, I suppose, appellate work would continue?
Well, absolutely. Now, one other thing, since we're getting ready, that apparently he's being executed, the whole issue of the logistics of carrying out the execution itself. Mm-hmm. You say he's got Parkinson's?
He's got bad Parkinson's.
Okay.
And they've been denying him recent medicine recently, so he jerks severely. How I know this is because a member of the prison show staff visits him regularly, Linda.
Okay, and an issue was raised on appeal as to whether the process itself would be cruel and unusual, mm-hmm. in that he may not have sufficient vein capacity to accommodate the lethal drugs, or if the drugs are administered, the process is going to take a long time with his condition.
In order to find a vein.
In order, not just to find the vein, but in order for death to occur.
Yeah.
If his veins have been compromised and his systems have been compromised, what is going to be the result of the process itself? Is it going to be a cruel and unusual?
It's
he raised
torture.
An issue. He lost on that the issue.
It's
but
torture.
But the whole issue is this going to amount to torture? Torture. That issue has been raised.
What was raised at some appellate level? What trial court
on one of the habeas?
Okay, and that begins in a trial court, a federal court.
But that would be fitness to be executed.
Yeah.
Like we've had cases about
sure.
whether the person is competent to be executed.
Sure.
Now if he's physically fit enough to be executed,
mm-hmm.
he lost that issue. But it's going to be interesting to see how long this process takes. Because the fact that he raised might be legitimate in terms of, is this man going to be tortured?
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Elizabeth, our producer, has a word.
Ray, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we just got a call from our reporter in Huntsville, and the witnesses have crossed the road, so death has occurred.
Okay. Danny Bible is dead at this point. It is now 6:37. I was started worrying about 6:29, and 6:37, mm-hmm. it's over. Danny is now dead. The witnesses have crossed the road, and in the follow-up, you can read his last words and other things in the Houston Chronicle reprint of Associated Press article by Grazik. And that's a regular thing for us. At least I wake up in the middle of the night and go to the website and read it. Danny Bible is dead, and we're talking at this point about an accident he had somewhere between Harris County and Death Row while being transported. Killed another inmate, killed the guard that was driving the car, and the article that I remember, it also killed a driver of a car with whom they had a head-on collision. And that'll just about do it. That'll just about do it. So that left Danny in bad shape. Now, I don't know a lot about Parkinson's disease. I don't know where it comes from. I don't know the symptoms very well. But if the symptoms of Parkinson include vein deterioration, that would be an issue that is likely to read, but that's academic now because it's a fait accompli. The other issue is it probably took extra staff on the execution team. When somebody's being executed, they have an execution team in there. And it's a bunch of pretty good-sized, burly East Texas prison guard boys, and they come in and they lift him up, putting him on the gurney, and then it's going to take more than usual to hold his arms down while they put needles in his arm. And I know this is not the most pleasant thing to talk about. Put the needles in his arms, and then that all gets strapped down with leather straps and maybe tape,
mm-hmm.
and then they introduce the chemicals, and he dies. Now, what happens to the body now? There was some discussion of that. We do not know if any of the witnesses to Danny's execution were blood kin. If there were blood kin there, and of course apparently he had some trouble allowing some members of his family to live, so that reduces the possible number. If they're blood kin there, they have the ability to request that the body be taken to a little church not far away so they can feel the body while it is still warm. I know that's pretty morbid stuff too, but that's become a tradition in Texas since Carnes has had the contract. Prior to that, the body was just shipped off, and people on death row cannot be touched by their visitors, families, friends. For the whole time they're on death row, there is no contact visit, there is no way to hug, there's no way to shake hands. You visit them in a glass and chain link wire fenced partitioned booth, and you talk over a telephone. And so touching the body after it is dead is the only occasion that you can feel the warmth of the body if you're next of kin. And we don't know if somebody was there as of next of kin. I do know that young Joseph Clark, who did our reporting and reported that the witness crossed the road, I do not know that he went to Juan Castillo's body show, to Juan's family.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he's naked, and he's on a stretcher, kind of a transport gurney, and it had quite an impression on young Joseph. That was pretty serious stuff. And speaking of Juan Castillo, Juan's sister, bless her heart, sent us, oh, here it is, Juan's sister, in the return address, it is Juan Castillo and his number over a stickered Ms. June Castillo from San Antonio, Texas. And in it is a funeral bulletin. And there's Juan's picture in a white T-shirt with a solemn look on his face and the famous psalm, "The Lord is my shepherd," is printed on the front. And inside is the name of the pastor and the scripture, John 3:18. And then there's artwork, and it's convict artwork. And one of the pieces of artwork is building bridge from here are all the tools you will need, and it's a hammer and spikes. It's written to his son. It's signed "Dead." That is Juan's art. And on the other word is hummingbirds gathered around flowers. Juan Eduardo Castillo, born on April 3, 1981, was ushered into the loving arms of the Savior on May 16, 2018. One is survived by his parents, Elias and June Castillo, sons Juan Edward Castillo Jr. and Julian Rene Castillo, and sister Manuela Cruzeta Castillo Kirby, and niece Kimberly Ann Kirby. And on the back is a more recent picture of Juan. He's got a few years on him there. The picture is dated, that's his birth and death date. And John 3:18, hand drawing of praying hands. This will go into Execution Watch archives at the University of Houston MD Anderson Library, where it will be among the documents for researchers to see in the future. We also got a letter from an inmate who had listened tonight. We're a popular figure on death row in Texas. And Tori Clark, thank you very much for your Larry Clark, your letter, Tori. And Elizabeth, the producer, will be in contact with you to work out the scheduling problems that you talked about.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
You mentioned many times about the policies in Texas of no touch.
Yeah.
Do other states have different policies?
Yes, very different places. In Louisiana, on the Green Mile, if you're about to get executed, you got like 3 to 5 days, whatever works out for the warden. depending on what the execution schedule is, you can go with your whole family, and there's an apartment there that the death row inmate about to be executed spends with their family, and they eat together, and the outside food can be brought in, or you can get stuff from the kitchen there on the prison.
Let's talk a second about the relatives who have done nothing wrong except be relatives.
Oh, yeah.
Do we think that the mother has a right to hold her son before he passes?
No, I'm opposed to all of this no-touching stuff.
So why does Texas do this? Strictly for meanness. Security?
Meanness.
And not security.
No, meanness. It's not security. Meanness. Look at me. I'm so crippled up, I can't even make it to the bathroom.
Yeah.
And I go visit them through that same plate glass their mother's visiting. And when it's over with, and we interview them, and we broadcast. And by the way, if this is your first time listening to this weird program, well, I'm sorry about that. This program is what this program is. And we try to do as good a job as we can telling you what we can find in the record and what we can get from the media at the time and try to do that. But everything we have ever done is on our website. Some of it's just radio shows. Some of it is radio shows and videos. Mm-hmm. Everything we have ever done is on that website.
And let me intersect. I have seen the website for as long as I've been on this show, but all I've ever looked at is the first page. I happened to read a book recently written by one of my favorite authors about a man who was executed in Texas in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
So I happened to go to a website to see if before I was on the show, the mm-hmm. show had done it. Well, what I'm saying is, not do you go to the website and scroll through the past shows we've done, do you realize how many executions
oh, yeah.
there are? Until you see the page after page after page of shows, do you realize how many people were executing?
But what I get from the mothers after we post the videotapes is thank you for their laughter. Because mothers don't get a lot of laughter visiting death row sons and daughters. But Uncle Ray goes in there, and I'm just another old convict. We can bond and smile and talk, and I go for the laughter. Because I know the mother wants to see
they
that.
They want and need it.
Yeah. All right. My name is Ray Hill, and I am honored to be the host of Execution Watch, and we come on only when Texas is killing someone. Today, on June 27th, 2018, Texas killed Danny Bible. Danny Bible was executed in the gurney in the death chamber in Huntsville. I'm an ex-convict, and I founded the prison show way back in 1980, and it's still running after 34 years, and other people are doing. I have retired from that, but I do this show. Our legal team is Larry Douglas. He's the guy with the voice of God. Michael Gillespie, who was the lead attorney on this case. Thank you, Michael, for doing such a good job. And Paige Yannick, thank you, Yannick, for putting up with me. And they did their best to try to give you just the facts, ma'am. But they have free to have feelings and other things. Outside the death chamber in Huntsville, we had Joseph Clark. And Joseph's a new addition to the prison show. He's doing well there. And he did 10 years. And he did almost 7 of that on solitary confinement. And he wants to be a prison activist, and he's come to the right place to learn how to do that. I know a thing or two, and other people on the prison show can help him progress. The next scheduled execution will be Christopher Young, and that's on July the 17th, less than a month away. Mr. Young's case is interesting. I've been reading that. The legal team will sort through it, and somebody will take the lead, and we'll do a show. We couldn't do this without our producer, Elizabeth Stein. She is the boss. which she reminds me frequently, and deservedly so. When it came time to do this show, I wanted to do it, but I was unwilling to do it with the work of producer and host. So I talked to Elizabeth about it. We were both tied up with the prison show then, and she took it on, and she looks very good carrying a whip and a chair, and she keeps me pretty much in line. Our technical director is Otis McClay, and Otis is an old friend from Pacifica Foundation who keeps up with our website and all of that important information. Engineering tonight, the guy with his hands on the buttons and the switches is Bob Gardner. And Bob's over there giving me the hoorah sign because we survived another show. The music that we play on this show, as I announced earlier, is done by Victoria Panetti. It's original music. And Victoria's brother is on death row. And in the absence of Anthony Kennedy, is likely to be executed in spite of his mental conditioning. Who you vote for makes a difference. I appreciate you all listening in. If you want to hear the show in a couple of days, it will be on the website as a radio show. And since we have the tonight's broadcast, we only videotape those programs where we have an interview. But tonight we've got a documentary filmmaker, and depending on whether I can negotiate the film from that, there may actually be a film on the website. And Gabriella and BBC hope to bring you a documentary about the work of Texas Prison Show and Execution Watch in the not-too-distant future.
I'd like to make a comment.
Sure.
We look at this as a legal exercise to show people both sides. We have sat here and analyzed this, and we brought up the issue of, did he just confess to these things to get out of Louisiana and get back to Texas? There's an argument that could be said that there's no real forensic evidence linking him to this crime. It's just his own confessions.
Yeah.
Now, we talk about this because we're lawyers, and we talk about it because there's points. But is there anybody here who really think he didn't do these other crimes? Does anybody really think that he made these things up to get out of
Louisiana? Is it all right not to have an opinion?
Well,
yeah. Is it all right not to have an opinion?
Okay.
You know, at this point, it's kind of academic. He's dead. No matter what he's done, it's over with now.
Or what I've believed he may have done or not have done. It is academic.
The only case that I can fall back on is that Henry Lee Lucas case.
Yes.
Henry didn't do any of that. None of it, except maybe his mother. And they were going to kill him. And if it hadn't have been for the 20-minute gap between that and the Broward County,
he would have been, yes.
He would have been killed. And if I hadn't known, some convict sends me a letter, if I hadn't known Jim Maddox, pick up the phone and call Jim. And Jim listened to what I had to say, and he said, well, damn. And I said, can you discuss this with the governor? And he said, I'm gonna. The governor at that time was George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
He went and talked to George, and they commuted his sentence to life in prison. And Henry Lee and one other death row inmate, whose name escapes me, both of them told me, wow, I'm glad they didn't cut me loose. I couldn't handle any more freedom than I've got right now. Think about that. Bob, you can start cranking her down. We've done all the damage we can do. I know we've got a little time, but maybe there's a PSA awaiting. I want to thank you all for listening. My name is Ray Hill. You can email me, hillray@svcglobal.net. In the next action, I'm going to gather everybody's notes up, because the notes from this show will go into our archive at MD Anderson Library at the University of Houston. And you researchers out there, I know you may be 10 years old now, but one of these days you're going to go and look at this prison and execution material and write a paper. Thank you for listening. Sorry to the friends and those who cared about Danny Bible. We lost one tonight. Don't you know they're killing people? Don't you know they're killing people? Don't you know they're